Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedure Subteam Track 5, Geographic Names at Top Level, taking place on the 21st of February, 2018. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. We have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-leader, Martin Sutton. Please begin.
Thank you, Terry, and welcome everybody to the WorkTrack 5 meeting. First of all, if you can look to the agenda, which is posted in the top right-hand box, we have the regular housekeeping to cover off some changes to make you aware of for the WorkTrack 5 leadership. We will then progress into where we left off, essentially, from our last meeting, which is exploring the treatment and the term geographic terms that were used in the applicant guidebook. And towards the end, we'll spend some time on additional geographic terms relating to comments that may have been received to date. And then we have any other business. So before I go any further, does anybody have any comments or any other business that they would like to include in today's call? Okay, not seeing any. And then with our regular checks, if anything exciting has been happening, which means that people have changed their statement of interest, please feel free to advise everybody at this time. Okay, not seeing any. Okay, so we'll move on then. First of all, then I'd like to advise everybody. You should have received a notification via email, which announced the fact that Christopher Wilkinson has stepped down from the co-lead role within the WorkTrack 5. He will still remain within the PDP group, so we look forward to him being active as a participant. And I'm also pleased to announce that ALAC have appointed Javier Rua as the ALAC member appointed to the WorkTrack 5 as the co-leader. So welcome, Javier, and we look forward to seeing you in Puerto Rico, in your hometown. So look forward to that soon in March. Right, so if we can move on then to item 3, which is the main section of our meeting today. And we'll probably need to move the slides forward. Am I in control of the slides? We'll get there soon. Whilst we're moving the slides through, if we could go to slide 5, please. Thank you very much. So for those that were not able to join us on our last call, you would have seen some of the correspondence put out and requesting any input since our last meeting and prior to that meeting relating to a spreadsheet which we've created which dissects the different geographic terms that were used within the applicant guidebook in the last round. And for each of those items, we've been stepping through and looking at whether the source information, the geographic term that was highlighted, is still valid for the term and purposes of new GTLDs. And what we were also exploring was what was the impact of that particular treatment of a geographic term. So positive impacts and merits, as well as any negative impacts that may have occurred or opportunities lost due to that treatment. We worked through about half of those items, so we've still got some way to go. So we'll move through. If anybody needs catching up, the link is shown in the agenda to the entire spreadsheet, so please feel free to take a look at that and familiarise yourself with it if you haven't looked at it lately, and I'm sure that there are some additional comments appearing on the second spreadsheet that's attached to that. But the next one, if we move the slide up to slide six. Excellent, thank you. So the one that we're focusing on first is a geographic term which is related to the permutation or transposition of any of the names included above. Oh, that's the problem of cutting these halfway through, I suppose. So this related to what was the one before this? The long and short and long form names associated with a code that has been designated. Oh, no. Actually, we'll probably need to clarify that. When it says the list above, I think we're missing a little bit of information that would be helpful here. If staff could just pull out the list that refers to above and post it in the chat box as we go along, that would be helpful if you wouldn't mind. But we've got examples here of what this relates to. So it includes the removal of spaces, of punctuation, addition or removal of grammatical articles like the. A transposition is considered a change in the sequence of the long or short form name. For example, instead of Czech Republic, it's Republic Czech. Or instead of Cayman Islands, it's Islands Cayman. So that's the term that was used. The treatment of that within the 2007 policy work reads as follows: as was available but challenged mechanism to governments to initiate an objection. Applicants should be aware of the GAC principles. Applicants must represent that the use of the proposed string is not in violation of the national laws in which the applicant is incorporated. However, the final guidebook meant that it was not made available. So those terms were restricted from being applied for. So if we run through this, so is it a valid geographic term for the purposes of the new GTLDs? This is slightly different to a lot of the ones that we previously looked at, where we were referring to source lists, namely a lot of the ISO-specific lists. So this is a variation on any existing lists. So I'd be interested to hear if anybody feels that there is any reason to object to having this as a geographic term for the purposes of new GTLDs, and then we'll move on to the sort of questions of B and C. So if anybody has any comments, please put your hand up and we'll have a queue. Caboose, please go ahead. We can't hear you, Caboose.
Yes, excuse me. Do you hear me now, please?
We do, loud and clear. Thank you, Caboose.
Is it okay?
It is. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. Could you repeat your question? Because I missed that one. The question is, is there any opinion? What was the question, please? Thank you.
Okay, Caboose. The questions are listed on the slide in red at the bottom. So the first question is, do we regard this term, the permutation or transposition of any of the names included in the list of short and long country names, do we consider that a valid term to use and to refer or make reference to a policy or treatment within future rounds of new GTLDs? So Kevin, to try and articulate that better, is there any reason why we wouldn't want to use this as a source to make or to determine treatment against this particular type of geographic term? So is it reasonable that we should be looking at switching around names instead of Czech Republic to Republic Czech and restricting those as being applied for? Okay, Alan, I've got you next.
Thank you very much. I know in some languages adjectives come before nouns, and in some languages adjectives come after nouns. So from that context, it may make sense. But do we have any examples other than the ones given, which are not terms I would have thought would be in common use, where the permutation actually is a used term and a used expression? Because, I mean, I don't think anywhere we would refer to the islands Cayman except in some arcane version of English, or the Republic Czech. But are there other ones where, in fact, it makes sense? These particular examples are perhaps not the best illustrations of why we have such a rule. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Good question, and I'm not sure if we have any examples immediately to hand on this, but that I think would be very helpful to extend the examples that we've got there. Just read up. Okay, so if anybody's got some alternatives to suggest as examples, please post them in the chat. And I think we'll further look into getting some other interesting examples up. Christopher, please go ahead. I can't hear you, Christopher. You may be on mute.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. Just to clarify, in this particular rubric, 22141, we are talking about country or territory names derived from the ISO 3166. Is that correct?
Right. Let me just read.
Because in that,
Emily's kindly posted the bit that's missing, I suppose, on this slide now that we've removed the previous deck. It's shifted. Hang on a second. So applications for strings that are country or territory names will not be approved as they are not available on the new GTLD program in this application round. Strings shall be considered country or territory name. It's in the Alpha 3 code list. Oh, it's moving, sorry. So it's...
Martin, it's Annabeth here. Could I help you out here?
Please do. I've got a moving chat box.
Yes, I think so. It's difficult when all these slides go ahead. This is Annabeth Lange for the record. What they are talking about here is actually relating to all the points above, not, it's a little unclear in the slide. It's point 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 in about the geographic name 22141. And that means that a permutation or transposition of an alpha 3 code long form, short form, or a long short form in association with a code that has been designated as exceptional reserved, and also a separable component of a country name. This that also was an annex to what we sent out. So this is quite complicated, and the way it's formed in point six is not easy to understand what it really means. So I think when we think about, is it a permutation of a tree code, that means that if you mix the letters of a tree code from the ISO 3166, then of course it will be one three-letter code that could be anything else that usually is allowed. So this is quite complicated and not easy to understand. So if we should keep that, we should at least do something more with it, as we talked about, have some examples and see if this is necessary in the future. Thank you. I hope that made it some clearer.
Much more clear, Annabeth. Thank you. I appreciate that. And so what I would take from some of this is the fact that we probably won't be able to pin down question A much further, but what we can do is probably look at the next set of questions. But before I do, I've got a queue. So I've got Jeff, Alan, and Christopher. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Kind of in line with what Annabeth said, I think the transposition part of it should only apply to long forms of names and not to any short forms. So it, like Annabeth said, it doesn't make sense with the three-character code. If we choose to protect the three-character code, we'll say like USA, we protect that. But UAS, so that might be something too. But let's assume that that's not a country for now. I don't know if it is on the ISO list. But if it's not on the ISO list, then it should not be protected because of USA. So we need to not apply the rule of transposition to that category, the short form of basically short form of anything that we decide to protect. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. And I've got Alan next.
Thank you. It certainly is poorly worded. I presume it means permutation or transposition, and I think the difference is transposition is only for two, of any of the words within a name, and presumably within a single name. So if the name is United States of America, then the states in America might be interchanged, and that would still be protected. It is not talking about the rearrangement of letters within what I would call a word, a single thing delineated by spaces on either side. Otherwise, we're outlawing almost everything that one could ever imagine. So clearly the wording has to be changed, but I believe the intent was to look at rearrangement of words or, you know, multi-letter things and not the letters within a thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Now, Christopher, Heather, and Alexander. Christopher, go ahead.
Yes, I think Jeff and Alan have made one major point. Obviously, you can't be permutating three-letter codes. But my main point is that the 3166 standard covers a lot of very useful and information and important references which have been widely used in the CCTLD community, but that there are a very large number of geographic terms which are not at all covered by the 3166 standard, and that I would expect as this negotiation proceeds and when we reach the, or shall I put it the other way, when the general public reaches the information about what we are discussing, that a lot of geographic terms will come up for which currently we do not have a policy. Thank you.
Thanks, Christopher. And just to be clear, we're not ignoring that aspect. that will be after we've reviewed what we've got listed as the terms of geographic names or references that existed in the applicant guidebook. So there is, you know, going to be a focus on what was not included, and therefore what we want to make sure is, are these lists that we're referring to here, in here, good as a reference point? But as you say, some may not encompass broad enough coverage of geographic terms in your mind, so that we can start looking at those and exploring those once we've gone through this list. Okay, thank you. Heather?
Thanks very much, Martin. I want to return back, if we could, Martin, to your comment made perhaps on the fly that perhaps A isn't the best starting point. So my comment is about the wording on the slide here and the question, A, is it a valid geographic term for the purposes of new GTLDs? I see the value in wording that question fairly loosely, but in terms of validity, it strikes me that just based on the responses that some have already given, some of us are interpreting that question as, let's say, interpreting the outcome of our discussions. In other words, is this something that validly receives separate treatment, as opposed to, is this something validly within the scope of our discussion? And I'm putting down, a marker to say that my interpretation of A is this sort of name a valid term for the discussion that we're having in WorkTrack 5, as opposed to a foregone conclusion, is this type of name something that deserves protection? So I hope that wasn't too confusing, Martin, and if it was, I'm happy to try again. I'll let you guide me. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. I do take your point, already we've heard some comments about future treatments. We need to hold back on that for the moment, just to try and focus in on what we've had going through the last process. And, you know, if there is any reason why we think that using a term or a specific type of list has provided great problems, then perhaps that's going to focus our attention on, you know, should it exist or should we be looking to, you know, explore alternative lists, for instance. I think so far we've gone through where it's referred to an ISO list that's well-defined and organized, and ICANN utilizes that source list. It's provided predictability. So that's one valid point. Once we start here, I think this is showing that the variations from those lists and trying to interpret that with permutations and transpositions, we're not actually referring to a direct list, which starts to become more confusing as we're seeing. But we'll move on, I think, in a minute to the impacts and on a negative and positive in a minute. So perhaps that will tease out some more more information for us to consider. So I've got Alexander and Alan, and then we'll move on to looking at the positive and negative impacts for this particular area. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Alexander Schubert. I want to make two very short remarks, and you said you want to move on in a minute. First, if we look at the transpositions, are not, I mean, if you look at the three characters, it was only permutations and not transpositions in the Appian guidebook. And because maybe some people don't understand what the difference is between a transposition and a permutation, a permutation is if you have A, B, C, and a permutation would be you move the A to the end. So it's not anymore A, B, C, it's B, C, A. Whereas a transposition means you can change the letters in any way. And for the three letters, they said only permutations, whereas for everything else, for the long forms, it was also transpositions. So the other remark I wanted to make is, if you look at a rule, then on the one hand, of course, you want to see what protection can it, cannot create and who is benefiting from it. And on the other hand, you have to look at, does it potentially create harm? And if the names of countries, on the long form of countries, I can almost not imagine that a harm could be created, because if you take a name like Cayman Islands, no one wants to apply for Island Caymans. So in this regard, why I don't think that the rule makes too much sense, I would say, okay, long form of countries, let the rule just be there if someone wants it. But if it comes to three letter codes, it doesn't really make sense, because people usually already don't know the three letter codes. There's just a few countries which ring a bell. If you go through the list of three letter codes for most countries, you would never in your life imagine that the actual country is behind it. But if you then make a permutation out of it, I mean, no one in the world can guess the country. It's impossible. So this rule, in my opinion, doesn't make sense at all. And the problem is, if you are giving leeway in with the long form of countries and say, okay, in the long form, let them do it, let them give transpositions and permutations, then once you give a right, people say, okay, then we want them also in three-letter codes. And that's, I think, what happened back then. So we have to really distinguish between long-form and three-letter codes. Finished. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. And then I've got Alan. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. This conversation could go on forever. I would like to propose that we consider removing this altogether, and I'll give you the reason why. The permutations of the letters within a three-letter code, I think we've flogged to death. That's something we certainly cannot outlaw. In terms of the permutations of a name in a long form, although we could outlaw Islands Cayman, we cannot outlaw the Cayman Islands. We don't outlaw embedded strings. And therefore, and that's why the objection process is there. So, you know, we're talking about TLDs, not second level. Since we have the objection process, and I think we should let that cover these potentially edge cases where someone is trying to masquerade as a company, as a country or a territory by flipping words, I think having it as a general thing, unless we can justify it with real examples, then I think it should come under the objection process, as it would if we had associated other words or things tagged onto it. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. So we do risk going down to what shall we do next with this before we've given it a chance to analyze any positive and negative impacts from the last round. But what I'm sensing from the conversations here today is that this is a very confusing and term to use, so that we've had difficulties understanding what the real implications are. A good question from Paul McGrady here is if anybody's aware of any problems that occurred in the last round specific to this related geographic term definition. Alex, is that an old hand? Or have you got an example? Okay. You're back again. Is that a new hand?
So it was an old hand, but the question that you asked was, had there been any problems with that rule in the past round?
Yes.
So, in other words, was there a potential applicant who couldn't apply because we had that rule?
No. I think what we'll find here is that this is similar to many of the other cases that we spoke about on our last call, where the lost opportunities aren't easy to identify unless people have got examples, real-life examples, of those that did not apply, which is very difficult to find.
I am such an example.
Oh.
I couldn't apply for, or I couldn't set up the applicant for a three-letter code that represents a country. And I started a project in 2010, and I had to abandon it in 2011 because this rule came up. So I am an example, and the Estonians are an example. They wanted to go for .est.
So these were, ESP, though, isn't that a country code? That's not a permutation, is it?
Right, ESP is Estonia.
So that wouldn't be within this specific term. It's not a permutation, is it?
Okay, you're just referring to the permutation and transposition, not to the actual three letter code. Okay, sorry, I misunderstood this. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That probably means that we had zero impacts on this that we're aware of for anybody that actually put in an application. What we're not clear of is anyone that was prevented themselves from going through because of the prohibition mentioned under this term. Okay. What would be useful?
I interrupt, but I mean, some people are actually reading rules. It's again Alexander Schubert. Some people are really reading the rules, and you never know, there might have been people, maybe even brands, who actually read the rules, who did the math, and understood, oh, we are a permutation of a three-letter code, and just not applied. So you would never know that. They just didn't apply. And there were even Google, who's usually quite well-informed, they did not apply for permutations, but they applied for three-letter codes. But they obviously did not read the rules so well.
Okay. Thank you, Alex. So one question I probably would like to raise, and I don't know if anybody can answer this, in terms of this specific term, does this also apply to translations into different languages? I think there's, I'm not sure whether that was clear in the entire write-up of the guidebook, or whether this is specific to the terms listed as they were, and not translated. If anybody's got a yes or a no to that, that would be great. Then please feel free to pop it into the chat, but that might be an open question. I think we'll move on to the next one on the basis that if we could record that this is confusing and we probably need to work on clarifying some broader examples of what this could really relate to. And I noted that we had a number of comments regarding future treatment. Perhaps if we could capture those and we can discuss those when we come back to the discussions on future treatment on all of these, if we can get to that today, that would be great on some of these, but might be ambitious as we've just got through the first one. But unless anyone's got any more comments on permutations and transpositions, I shall move to the next slide and we'll explore the next term. Okay, hearing none. So if we could move to slide 8, please. So slide 8 is referring to a name by which a country is commonly known, as demonstrated by evidence that the country is recognised by that name by an intergovernmental or treaty organisation. So an example for this one, can we move the slides? Still on slide 7, well, that's a bit, okay, lovely. So example of this is Holland, which is a common name for the Netherlands. So the original policy treatment was available, but challenge mechanisms were available to use. And in the applicant guidebook, the result was that these terms would not be available as a GTLD. So let's just quickly have a look at this one. In terms of a geographic term for the purposes of formulating any treatment within new GTLDs, did we feel that this was a comfortable one, or does anybody have any thoughts as to why this may not be relevant to include for the purpose of new GTLDs? that. Okay. So, no concerns raised. Okay, fine. So, were there any recognized positive impacts based on this treatment, or any negative impacts that people can think of or experienced with regards to the prohibition of these terms? Feel free to form a queue. Good opportunities to hear from anybody that has any particular comments. Okay. So we'll, does anybody think that, I think one of the things that we've regularly pointed to is that it's predictable. So something like this can be referenced and found somewhere, easy to understand, so there is a level of predictability. If nobody has any objections to that, I would suggest that we put that into the positive side. The only other aspect, I suppose, is if any of the countries wanted to apply for those. I don't know if anybody's got any experience of any countries wishing to actually apply for a country name such as this. Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Martin, that's an interesting question. Do we really want to prohibit a country from applying for its own name, its own common name, which is what that is effectively saying? Or is there a provision that any of these country territorial names can be applied for by the country that it represents?
Yeah, I mean, my interpretation here is that, you know, nobody can apply for it, which, you know, for some that may prefer to have a country name extension in addition to perhaps a two-letter code,
but
may want to go ahead with this, but presumably on the basis that it is under the terms of a GTLD versus a CCTLD contract?
No, but we certainly had applications for names that were otherwise prohibited, I thought. You know, Africa is perhaps an example. So I thought we did allow these names with the appropriate permissions. Maybe we need a clarification. Was that an overriding of something that overrode this not permitted as TLDs, or is there some other provision I'm missing?
No, for Africa, I think that's on our last item, which is UNESCO regions, and that required a different treatment of support or non-objection from a percentage of national government. So this is very specific and different to the UNESCO list, and so this was a restricted from application.
So we, to be clear, we did prohibit Canada from applying for Canada.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. So I've got Alexander, Susan, and Beth, and then Christopher. So please go ahead, Alex.
Okay, this is again Alexander Schubert. As I said, most of you know probably that Dirk and me already started in 2005 to go for .Berlin, and as we were one of the first to think about a geographical-based top-level domain, I bought it a lot more over the years, and I came up with a nice idea for the 2012 round that would not work because it was a three-letter code of a country. So I really immersed myself very deeply there. And as far as I understand, what happened with the GUC is that GUC members kind of felt that they have to protect something, and the deal that was made maybe I'm wrong, please correct me, but the deal that was made was to say, okay, at least let's have the country names in these three letter codes, let's accept them, because we cannot come up with a protection mechanism that the countries are in favor of. But after the Iran commences, or after the round started, we will discuss about it, and that was the big cross community group that for several years tried to find a solution but never came up with it. So obviously, one, if there would be a mechanism in place that makes sure that a country doesn't kind of lose authority over their own name, they should be fine with it, but in the short time they had for the 2012 round, they couldn't come up with a mechanism, and they said, okay, let's block them now. And that's actually also the language that you see in this prohibition that says, this round is blocked, let's talk about it for the next round. So, and Alan is quite right. I mean, if you look at a country like Israel or Turkey or Spain, and they say, well, for our tourism, we would like to have our country name to promote tourism and investment. Or if you look at Qatar or Bahrain, and they say, for whatever, e-government, we would like to use our country name in the same respect that the United States have a .gov. It's a little bit difficult to deny that to them. The United States can have e-government through .gov. The other countries cannot really, because they just have a CCTD, and the CCTD is open to everyone. So I think this is the most important use case, that countries would use their country name for e-government or to promote tourism and investment.
Let's keep on track here. This is very similar to our discussions on the previous call, which related to the short form, long form names of countries. So this is exactly the same, essentially, because Holland, we're saying, is equivalent to the long form name. And within our recordings of the last meeting, we quoted that the benefits was it was easy and predictable to understand and follow. The negative side was, if a country wanted to apply for their long name, they were not allowed. So we'll list those down as the negatives and positives for this type of term, because I think it represents the same. And I think I have heard no objections that this is a term that we shouldn't include within our continued deliberations. So we'll capture that. And thanks for the explanation. So I think it all goes in support of that. Is that okay, Alex?
Yes, of course, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. So I've got Susan and Beth, Christopher and Justin. So, Susan?
Yeah, thanks. Hi, it's Susan Payne. I put my hand up because I was getting a bit confused, but I think perhaps what you've just said has clarified it for me. I think it's very difficult when we're going through this, and particularly when we're looking at the positives and negatives, not to get bogged down in the how they were treated in the previous round, and we keep ending up having this discussion about how they should be treated in future. And I thought our purpose here was to just agree amongst ourselves, should it be do we agree we should consider it a geographic name, yes, no, and what were the pros and cons from how it was treated last time around, but not getting into a kind of detailed discussion of what we think should happen in the future. That was my understanding anyway, but I think that's why I put my hand up, because I was getting a bit confused. We seem to be getting into the detail of the discussion about what should we do for future rounds. In terms of the positives, whilst I had my hand up, you made a comment that it was easy to understand and kind of predictable. I kind of would agree, but I mean, there's an awful lot of confusion in the chat and indeed on the speakers on this call about how certain names were treated. So I guess it's in theory, yes, it was predictable and easy to understand, but it's not that easy, it would appear, in practice.
Okay. So So were there examples of anybody applying for a country name? I don't think there was.
But no, I'm not necessarily suggesting that. Sorry, Martin. I was being a bit flippant, okay. But it's just there's an awful lot of people in the chat saying things like, "What do you mean I couldn't apply for Canada?" And theoretically, if the rules were really easy to understand, we'd all know that. But people, you know, they can't be that easy to understand because people are not understanding what they said.
Okay, Susan. Thank you. And Beth. You might be on mute, Annabeth. I still can't hear you, Annabeth. Whilst we try and...
Do you hear me now?
I do, yes.
Can you hear me now?
Loud and clear, please.
Do you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, I'll try again. I just want you to clarify some of the questions that's been on the chat. It's not for those who have not been involved all this time to see what was the reason and why did we have it the way we had in 2012. They, as Susan said, they asked, couldn't I have the Canada? So what was the decision last time was that country and territory names, and when we say territory, it's kind of not the same territory as Patagonia and Amazon or Zonas and these kind of things, but those who are on the ISO 3166 list, and it's part of a country, but not a real country. And they were prohibited in this round in 2012. Whether or not they shall have a permission or a non-objection or support the next round, that, as Susan said, we should leave that for the next discussion, but it's certainly geographical names. And I think we would benefit of trying to just define now what is geographical names, then we can get sooner to the next round to discuss what to do with them in the next round. Thank you.
Thanks, Annabeth. Yeah, so just to clarify again, this was in the applicant guidebook. As you read it here, this type of term and what we discussed at the previous call, the short and long names of countries as well, were not permitted to apply for. So I've,
that's right.
I've got Christopher, Justine, and then Steve. Christopher, go ahead, please.
Hi, Christopher Wilkinson again for the record. Martin, following up on one of your earlier comments, and for the moment to be deliberately pedantic, in this context, G must stand for geographic. I really don't understand how the geographical terms were ever considered by anybody as generic. They're not generic. What we're talking about is names that are very specific to locations, cultures, and communities worldwide. We have to develop policies that are relevant for those cultures, communities, and geographies worldwide. And I don't think it's relevant to treat them as generic. In other respects, quite clearly what I've just said is a completely different agenda from what we're working through at present. So I have no further comments. Thank you.
Okay, Christopher, I've got Justine. Please go ahead.
Hi, Justine for the record here. This may be out of line, I was just curious. The AGB 2.2.1.4.1 refers to applications for strings that are country territory names. So it's referring, as my understanding goes, to exact matches for country or territory names. is there any, I'm not terribly well versed with AGB, so is there any part of the AGB that deals with the string that contains a country or territory names? For example, they said that nobody was allowed to apply for Canada, but can anyone apply for, say, Go Canada? Thank you.
Thank you. I don't believe there is any restrictions with the example that you quoted there. There is obviously other functions within the process that could lead to objections. So a government may consider that to be problematic and could file an objection during the course of the application process. Okay. So, Steve?
Thanks, Martin. This is Steve Chan from STEF. And I think the point I wanted to raise was largely covered by Annabeth and you as well, Martin. But I just left my hand up because I think it probably bears repeating. So everything that we've talked about that in reference to whether or not these geographic terms should be in scope for discussions within WorkTrack 5, everything we've discussed so far has been under Section 2.2.1.4.1 of the Applicant Guidebook, and that applies to the treatment of country or territory names. And so then everything that we have discussed up till now, none of these would be approved none of these would have been approved in 2012, either from a general applicant or the country that it's related to, or country or territory, I should say. So I think it's probably important to get this bearing that everything we discussed so far, none of these would have been able to be applied for by anyone. So I think that basis, I think, is something that we all probably need to maybe a little reminding on. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that. So I think these are old hands, and so then I've got Susan, and then I'll close it off on this particular term. Susan, please go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm trying to take it down.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. So I think what we'll capture there is what I said earlier, which is very similar to the short and long term names that we captured on the previous call. So we can move on, I think, to the next term, next slide, slide 9. So this is where we start to move out a little bit more. So it's a representation in any language of a capital city name of any country or territory listed in ISO 3166-1. Examples of this is London, Londres, Lundain, or Berlin. I don't know how to pronounce Berlin, I suppose. The next one, I'm Berlino. So those are examples of capital cities with variances on languages as well. So within the 2007 policy, there was a challenge mechanism available, but it was open for to apply for. Within the implementation guidebook of the guidebook, this specific term required support or non-objection from relevant governments or public authorities. Now, I've heard plenty of times before that this has been a welcome one. It was predictable, and the support non-objection method worked well. I seem to remember hearing that from Javier at previous meetings, from Alexander, and some others. But I just appreciate us having a chance to go through here. And if anybody has, first of all, got any strong reasons to say that this should not be included as a geographic term, please get in the queue. But I think we'll just focus otherwise on any other positive impacts or negative impacts that haven't been raised previously, but we'll capture those points that I just raised, just for the sake of time, essentially here. Olga, I think I see your chat, but I think other cities come in a supplement term that we'll follow through on. This is specific to capital cities, a reference of a term that was used in the AGB. Okay, so I'm not seeing anybody in the queue. So from that, then we've got the, you know, predictability worked well. I think what I also remember hearing, and if somebody could potentially say something to this, is that it was still quite difficult sometimes to find the right part of the organisation to seek approval within the local authorities. Was that something that others could substantiate rather than just my memory? Okay. Hearing none, I think we'll put a question mark under that, because I think that might be something that may need to be explored, is the implementation of that process. Susan, thank you. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I took a while to get off mute.
You might be on mute.
Yes, I think there probably were some issues with that. It probably depends on the particular city, how easy it would have been to find the right department. But I think there might also have been some the length of time the kind of program went on, I think, had the capacity to cause some problems in that regard, because obviously you know, sort of city administrations can easily change, and I think that was a situation in some cases where perhaps, you know, the mayor of a city who gave permission at one point probably wasn't the mayor by the time the program came to fruition. I'm not sure that anything, you know, completely failed as a result of that, but I do think that those situations did arise. So maybe it's something we want to think about on implementation in terms of some kind of a timing issue.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate that. Nice. I see comments from Liz and Beth also in the chat, including problem was twofold. The length of time meant that quite often political representatives changed, and the second was resolving competing applicant bids in a way that was easily assessed. And also, Command Beth, I agree with you. We could make it easier for applicants to find the relevant authority, and GAC could be of help here. So we'll capture those, I think, under the negatives, and they very much feel more like implementation issues that we can explore when we come back to that and look at future treatments. So thanks for that. Justine, good point there. Question mark over what happens if a capital city name changes over time. We have similar issues, I suppose, with some countries. So perhaps that is a leading question for many of these, if not all, the terms that we've got here. So, you know, what does happen if those country names change? And I think we should list that one in as a future exploration. Okay. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to the next slide then, which is slide 10. And this is city names. So this is not capital city names, any city name used for the purposes associated with the city name. So it's relevant to the geographic term that it relates to. So an example here is Bath, Florence, Frankfurt. In the policy effort, these were to be available, but with a challenge mechanism available. In the applicant guidebook, the final version required support and non-objection from relevant governments or public authorities. So if we run through this again, same process. I mean, if anybody has any strong objections as to why that term should be included, perhaps you could say. You're not talking, please go on mute, please. Getting some background noise. Okay, let's move then to the next bit, which is either looking at positive impact or the negative impact of the treatment of these city names, where it is going to be used, declared to be used as a city name. Oh, sorry, no, let's move back. Back to 10, please. We've shifted the slides a bit too early. Just want to make sure we have an opportunity to capture any positive or negative impacts in regards to city names that were used for the purposes of city names. Okay, so from Anbeth, I've got a note here that cities are GA names, but sometimes also generic names and brands. Yes, agree. So perhaps we need to reflect that in the negatives. We'll come on to that as well, I suppose, in the next section, which talks about city names that are not used for the purpose of a city name. Okay, I'm not hearing anything. Just a question out then on this. Is it predictable? That's one of the key issues a lot of the time for some of the requirements in the applicant guidebook. Does anybody have any thoughts on whether this reference is predictable and easy to understand? Justine, good point. So, city, who determines if a city is a city? I suppose we can reflect that back also for the your earlier comment in terms of when these change as well. So maybe something that we need to come back to. Okay. All right, so it doesn't seem as if we've got any strong issues with that one. Let's move on to the next term then. So here it's the other flip of the coin. So as Anbeth said, you know, these city names, there's many of them, and a lot of them will represent different meanings as well. So they could be brands, they could be generic terms that are used in everyday use, or in different languages, they mean something completely different. So here we've got a set of examples. Bath means, you know, various different names. Florence is a name, the city. Bar is another example. We're getting some background noise, so if you're not speaking, please do mute. Thank you. So let's have some hands up for this in terms of how anybody, oh sorry, in just to make sure people understand what the process was. In the policy aspect, it was available, but again, there's challenge mechanisms that can be followed. Within the applicant guidebook, there were no requirements for these. So for city names used for other purposes rather than a generic, a geographic reference, there were no requirements needed for these city names. So these are not capital cities, they're other cities. So first of all, we'll skip A, I think, and move to, does anybody have any examples of positive or negative impacts that may have occurred or could occur using this term? So I've got Alan in the queue. Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you. The question is, there is no requirements to get approval from that city, but I presume there's also no requirement in the contract to keep using it for the other purposes. Doesn't this seem to be a potential conflict? That if you admit you're using .Montreal, you know, for as a city, you need approval from the city, but if you're planning to, if you say you're going to use it for something else, but then turn around and use it as a city name, that's perfectly legal. So I sense something's missing here. Either I'm missing something, or we have a problem, and we have several people putting up their hands.
Yeah, let's see if anybody can respond.
Montreal Mini is a bad example. I don't know what else we would use it for other than a city name, but let's pretend we could.
Okay, thank you. Alexander, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Alexander Schubert. again, as someone who has applied for it, I'm thinking about this since ages. And the problem with that is obviously there were a lot of people who tried to game the system. And if I would know, I can apply for a city name, and I just say it's for whatever, but it's not for the city. It's not GTD operator or the registry is using it in a way, because they just make it available at the registrars. It's the registrants using it in a way. So if you look at the classical, I call it the donuts domain. If you look at the classical donuts domain, donuts does nothing. They just make domains available. And even, I mean, when they say, and I don't want to suggest that donuts would be a bad player here, but if someone like donuts would apply, maybe even accidentally, for a city name, there's no intention whatsoever. It is the of that city that would start. Okay, arguably you could say if someone is not targeting a city, or says he is not targeting a city, he will not be able to do marketing in that city, and his reach will be limited. I mean, if this is an easy way to get a city name without city approval and without owing any royalties to the city, I'm just applying for it, and I anyway don't have any intention to do marketing in that city, well, that's my way out. So the misconception here is that the registry is using the name. It's the registrants who are using it, and there's no influence of the registry.
Thank you, Alexander. Christopher?
Hi, Christopher Wilkinson again. My only point at this stage in the discussion would be to cast our minds forwards and backwards. 20 years ago, this was not an issue. 10 years ago, it was a minor issue for the second level. Today, it is a serious issue among the people who have understood the issue. And those are a very minor part of the potential global use of the internet in the next 10 years. Go out on a limb here, I'd be completely opposed to a 21st century registry proposing to use a geographical name not for the purpose of the region concerned. That, in a few years' time, could become a major issue. To coin a term, cyber colonialism. Look, we have to think in the long term and consider that the next 10 years, the next 20 years, will result in the expansion of the internet and the domain name system for as much as we have seen in the past. And I do not accept options that create assets or current registries and registrars, which will undoubtedly be contested in the future.
So we look forward to discussing treatments further, Christopher, but for now, let's stick with what we're trying to get through on the agenda. So if I could move to Alan, please.
Thank you. To be clear, I was certainly not talking about what should be allowed. I was just asking for a clarification on what was allowed in the last round. And to put my question more succinctly, if I had applied for Dot Frankfurter with a business plan of capitalizing on people's love of hot dogs, would anything have stopped me from after it was the TLD was in place and delegated for me starting to market to people in stores in Frankfurt? I was asking the question, was it allowed? Because it implied here that it was that scenario would have been allowed.
Thanks, Alan. If we don't get an answer from anybody that's able to tap into that now, we'll take that away to come back on, because I think it's an important part, and we can at least capture that as a question with under the negative impact is to explore the issue of any subsequent changes to an operation of a TLD that initially started out as a non-geographic purpose, subsequently changes in the future. So we'll capture that. And Jeff, I'll have you next.
Yeah, I'll put this, thanks. I put this in the notes, in the chat. But it's cool. You can't hear me? Can anybody else hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, we've got you now.
Okay, sorry. I put this in the chat, but I wanted to kind of raise this. Chat went by pretty quickly. There is a provision in the registry agreement that says that you basically represent that all the statements you made during your application process were true and correct and will continue to be true and correct. Now, perhaps, you know, you might argue that that's not good enough or that you could drive a truck through that. With exceptions, and you know, if that's the issue, fine. We can, you know, I'm sure you can work on making that much more airtight. But there is a provision to stop the intentional gaming. That if you always intended it to be geographic, you just said it wasn't in your application, then technically, ICANN did have a mechanism to go after you, and that could be applied in the future as well. So if you apply for Mars, let's say you're Mars the candy bar, and Mars, Pennsylvania doesn't like it, you know, you can legitimately make the statement that you are not using it in its geographic sense, that you're using it with respect to your products and services. And, you know, if someone wanted you to contractually commit to that, I don't think that Mars or others would have an issue with that if that's the big thing that's standing in the way. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. I think we'll include that in terms of comments to the question, and probably just need to clarify specifics from the guidebook or the contract that we can populate that with. And if that is something that when we consider future treatment that we want to address, we can dig a lot more deeper. Thanks very much, though. So I'm going to move on to the next one. So slide 12. So we're moving out to different terms here. It's an exact match of a subnational place name, such as a county, province, or state listed in ISO 31662. I don't think I can pronounce that. I'll try. No, I can't. I can't pronounce that, but there's an example listed. And in the policy work, that was available, but subject to challenge mechanisms if needed. And within the final guidebook, this was a term that would require support non-objection from relevant governments or public authorities. Now, as this is based tightly back on a list, I'm kind of going to suggest that we would include in the positives that it was predictable and objective, but if anybody would disagree, please state now before we move on to the wider ideas of positive and negative impact. Fine. Not seeing any. So let's move on. If anybody on this slide still, we will... looking at these, so states or counties, provinces, were there any positive impacts. I'm not quite sure if I can recall any off the top of my head that were applied for that would have been under this term and that followed through with the support non-objection. But if anybody's got an example to speak of, that would be great. So I've got Susan in the queue. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Martin. It's Susan Payne. Terribly sorry, I haven't got a positive example, but I was just going to mention, it's a point we've captured on previous slides as well, but the predictability point, I mean, there certainly was were problems and lack of predictability about where you get the consent from. There was a definite issue around that in this particular context.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. And if anybody has any objections, let me know. But I think that we can carry through the same remarks again in terms of city names, you know, the requiring support non-objection could be similar in terms of practical implementation concerns that we've experienced. Alexander, please go ahead.
Again, it's Alexander Schubert. Was your question whether there have been examples in the 2012 round where people applied for such a subnational place name?
Yeah, so a subnational place name that we can refer to as, you know, it worked well, or there was definite issues that occurred that we can refer to and highlight.
Right. I mean, there have been obviously big issues. Just for example, if you take the Indian giant Tata that most Westerners don't know, but if you're Indian, you know it for sure. It's a billion-dollar corporation, and they're building vehicles, cars, and trucks, and they wanted to have .Tata, and it's a real, real big brand. And there's a tiny, tiny, tiny 15,000 people place somewhere in a desert, which I'm not even sure that they have internet, but certainly no industry. And I think Morocco, and they are called Tata because there are some countries you have to understand. I mean, if you look at the United States, which is a very big country and has a lot of places, they have just a handful of names in that list, mainly their states. But then there's relatively small countries who have a truckload of terms in that list, and Morocco was one of them, and a tiny region Tata that no one ever has heard of and that has no relevance globally was able to dictate the terms to the big corporation Tata, and the big corporation still doesn't have its sub-level domain. And in another case, .bar, which was applied for bars, like restaurants, they had to give them $100,000 for a new school or anything like that in order to get the permission from them. But again, it was a very tiny region that is in this list, but nobody has ever heard of. So while it's predictable and you have lists you can work off, in many cases it seems almost a little bit unfair if this is a region that no one is connecting with that country. And in some cases, like Tata, they never got their TOD, and the question is why. I'm finished.
Thank you, Alexander. No, that's a great example. Thank you very much. So we'll reference that under this specific term, I think. That's very useful. And that's, you know, in thinking about how the policy is applied and implemented. So I think that will be helpful to follow through on that one. Anybody else in the queue? I can see the comments shifting here a bit quickly. So if anybody has anything to say that they'd like to speak to, please raise your hand. Otherwise, we'll try and capture some of the comments that are being posted into the chat. But if there's anything you would like to raise out of that, please do so now before we move on to the next slide. Okay, Caboose, please go ahead.
Yes, I put in the chat one example, but I understood that this was already been delegated. So take a region like Europe. How you get the agreement of Europe? First of all, there is no definition for Europe. What is Europe? What is not Europe? Then if there is a, whom you go for getting the agreement, you know that this Europe contains the countries which are Eastern Europe, Western Europe, in still old situation, and then that is difficult to act, and how to go to the other regions. So, so the region is quite difficult sometimes. Thank you.
Indeed, and I'm not sure where I'd be able to go to now that we're following through with Brexit, so that's a very good point. It's not, that might be under a different area. Perhaps we could just leave that as an open question in terms of Europe. I know .asia was one that preceded all of the new GTLD process, but Europe is a good example as to what would we see that as a process, how would we see that as a process working under the existing terms, and if that isn't captured under one of these terms, that we can explore under geographic terms that we might want to consider. So thanks for that. Okay. Kavis, is that your old hand?
Yes, it is a new hand. My wonder, perhaps I was not involved in that, how agreement on Asia was obtained with 75 countries and independent territories. I don't remember or believe that all countries were consulted or given any consent on that. There was something that being have been done. I don't know how it has happened. So there has been something that put the people before a fait accompli. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Caruso. I think we'll have to carry that over as a question. I'm looking at the time at the moment. Paul, if I cut the line after you, please go ahead.
Thanks, Paul McGrady here. I wish I had thought of this earlier. This jumps out at me as a significant variation from the GNSO Council adopted policy and where it ended up in implementation. I think for anything like that where there's a significant variation, we need to flag those so that we make sure that we address them all before the PDP is done. Because unless we change the policy stands. But if we don't address situations where there were significant variations from the policy by implementation, then I don't know what we have, because it's neither policy nor is it not policy. Not sure. So I think we need to flag the situations where there were significant variations so that we make sure that we don't send a report to the council that it doesn't know what to do with. Thanks.
Sorry, Paul, before you go back on mute, what one are you specifically referring to? What variation?
So if we look here in for 2.2142, the policy is available but with challenge mechanisms, and then the implementation of the guidebook was requiring support, not objection. That is, they're the exact opposite of each other. One is free speech, the other is not free speech. One is, government-owned words that you have to get permission to use, I guess. So this is a great example of how the policy wasn't followed. And there, we may have already encountered several of these along the way. We may almost want to go back and flag those, certainly keep this in mind for the future. But this is a PDP, so we're looking at policy. So if we are going to change the 2007 policy, we need to do that on purpose. So we need to at least flag them as we walk through these to make sure when we turn our attention to what we're going to do how they're going to be treated in the future, to make sure that we've addressed them all. Thanks.
So just to respond to that, Paul, that is the intention of why we're doing this particular exercise. Because highlighted early on in the Work Track 5 process, It was distinct that there was a distinct variation between the policy, as you can see illustrated through each of these examples, and the final guidebook approach. So what we do need to do when we start going back about future treatment of these is whether the applicant guidebook worked effectively, and perhaps we should consider continuing that and therefore adopt that as policy versus something different, or even potentially revert to the policy that was originally specified in 2007. So that is an important part of this work, because we do understand that the guidebook does not represent the policy in its entirety in regards to geographic terms. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense, because yes, and we will keep track of it, because we'll be going through, so sorry, I saw your comment in the chat. So we will be going through these and back through looking at treatment, and if we feel that treatment should be the same or it should differ, that needs to be interpreted in terms of a policy recommendation. Thanks a lot. Okay, so we are running out of time, I'm afraid, but we've worked through quite a lot here. There was one final item that we were going to look at, which is the UNESCO strings. What I would say is please continue to provide input. You're welcome to do that via email so that we could add comments to the spreadsheet, very much along the forms that we were going through today in terms of benefits, the pros and cons essentially is the treatment of those terms in the applicant guidebook. And we can start thinking about how they should be treated in the future and if that should change at all. I did want to also just mention that there is some information on the spreadsheet on a separate tab, which relates to geographic terms that were not included that people would like to see considered by WorkTrack 5. You are also welcome to input to that and add your comments for us to consider what we will be looking at after we have gone through the existing terms, which we've nearly gone through in terms of before we start looking at future treatment. So in the meantime, you still can provide inputs on those points. And what we'll take away from today is a lot of the comments and populate that into the spreadsheet as well, so we can keep track of what's being said and how we're viewing some of these particular existing terms. And we have just got a couple of minutes left. I did want to mention that we have a work plan still to firm up for the way that we're going to roll this through to create an initial report. And that needs to be in sequence or slightly lagging the overall work group PDP. So we'll be looking really still at aiming for an initial report midway through this year. So this is important work that we should continue in between meetings, but do come prepared to discuss and provide your input as we go through the rest of this exercise. In ICANN 61, we'll be looking at what to do in that particular time and make best use of it for the work track. And please keep an eye out for that. And if you have any suggestions, you're more than welcome to post those to the list and to the leadership team. I don't think I have any other points there to flag at this stage, but does anybody else have any comments? So I have Milagros. Is that yes, pronounced correctly?
Can you hear me?
I can, yes. Please go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering if any consideration has been given to homonymous names. Who gets the right to register a name when we have two cities with the same name in two different countries?
Good question. Okay, I think we'll log that for now. We're at the end of the call, I'm afraid. So we'll go back and add that in to follow through. There's some good questions being teased out, so thank you for that. Okay, right, so we are at the end of the call, I'm afraid. Thank you so much for all your input today. It's been very helpful and well received, and we'll continue the conversations. The next meeting is during ICANN 61, and we look forward to seeing many of you there.
Thank you. Good call.
Thanks.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. May the operator, if you could please stop all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.